Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. We had a succession of live guests here in the studio. Starting off, we'll hear our monthly county report from Leanne Harter. Then it'll be time to talk about bluebirds with Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms from Iowa Bird of Mouth. Nathan Brockman from the Butterfly Wing of Ryman Gardens will tell us about Butterfly Field Day at McFarland Park next Saturday, June 17th. Following up on alarming articles in local newspapers last week about the closing Crawford Hall, the women's homeless shelter in Boone, will be visiting with Mike Easton of the property's new owners, Cornerstone Church, and have an interview with the current director of the shelter, Kathy Pinkerton. That's a lot. So let's get started with Leanne Harter.
Well, I'm going to start out with an update from Story County Veterans Affairs. They are actually located here in Ames at the Human Services Center at 126 South Kellogg. They have pretty amazing 50th anniversary commemorative books that are available to in-country Vietnam veterans. It's available to the in-country veterans to begin with, and they are free. So Veterans Affairs is at 515-663-2930. They ask the veterans to call, and spouses can call as well, to schedule an appointment. They'll need to bring along their DD-214 and receive their book, and also talk about what benefits are available as veterans to that served our nation. So I've seen the book, and it's pretty amazing. It's a great commemorative book. Switching gears to animal shelter and animal control, it's been hot. We all know that, and I think maybe today's a little bit of a cool down, but it's heat waves still coming at us. Story County Animal Control would like to remind everyone about following points in high temperatures with recent forecasts. One, make sure all outdoor animals, whether they are domestic or livestock, have plenty of water and a place to be out of the sun. Sue McCaskey, our animal shelter director, was at the Board of Supervisors meeting yesterday, and she said even if you have a horse that's stubborn enough that doesn't want to go inside, still have an opportunity for it to go inside and get in the shade. Second, make sure those indoor animals do get let out, but for shorter amounts of time than normal. Don't just open the door and let them out and then leave them out for a couple hours. Get them back in, get them out of the heat, and make sure they have ample water as well, because even though they're outside in a short amount of time, they still need that additional water. Don't leave any living or breathing thing inside a vehicle of any kind, whether animal or human. Temperatures, as we all know, climb very rapidly in that park vehicle. And if you can't take them with you and have them be safe, just leave them at home. And the last point Sue would like us to share is that if anyone sees any animals in distress, call the local authorities. Dial 911, law enforcement, or animal control, and make sure the situations are immediately alleviated. So that's it from animal shelter. I'm going to switch to planning and development. Planning and development does zoning and subdivision authority for unincorporated, so outside city limits in Story County. Story County has a new ordinance that talks about special events, and that special events ordinance is to provide an opportunity to have an additional level of regulations and protections to participants, volunteers, and spectators that are going or involved in a special event. A special event is defined, you know, it's in a regulation, as something lasting longer than 4 hours. And involving greater than 250 participants, volunteers, and spectators. So it's not just a simple garage sale unless you have a whole bunch of stuff. It's just that larger event that's going to last a lot longer, have a greater transportation impact, possibly have the need for emergency services to go on the site, that big festival, whatever it may be. It does require a permit. There's an application process that you have to go through. Planning and development encourages everyone to go to the county's website, which I'll say now, but I'll say again later at the end if you remind me. It's www.storycountyiowa.gov. to get that special events application and get more details. Their phone number as well is 515-382-7245. So if you have a special event coming up, you need to be thinking ahead at least 3 to 4 weeks to get that permit and make sure everything's done accordingly. And then lastly, what I want to share with you is the Story County Attorney Jessica Reynolds' office has been doing some pretty exciting and interesting training and outreach with the community. They attended further training with the State Crime Victims Compensation Program to really continue to build their ability to assist crime victims. Also, a large group of Story County employees, I think it's on Facebook and Twitter both, it's a great picture. They accompanied Jessica Reynolds to volunteer at Food at First in Ames. And what Jessica is doing is encouraging her staff and the entire community as well to get involved and give back. She encourages everyone to go to Food at First and help out. And you can, as you know, search it by looking at Food at First Ames, Iowa. And then their entire Story County Attorney Reynolds did help safety training, very important aspect, especially this time of the year as we have crews going out in the field as Story County conservation folks, volunteers, and temporary staff. And then she also helped the Citizens Academy that is run through the Story County Sheriff's Office. And I think that's something we might want to talk about sometime, too, is what that Citizen Academy is all about. She also, which I witnessed firsthand, she went to the Nevada High School students for a pre-prom-related activity about the dangers of alcohol and driving. And, wow, was it that simulated crash was pretty well received by the students and faculty as well. She's been going around countywide this time of year with graduations, presenting the American Citizenship Award to graduating seniors. I know Nevada had one, and I think every school district had one that received that in Story County. That award is sponsored by the Story County Bar Association and really provides scholarships for many years to a lot of Story County students. And last, I think everyone is well aware of what's happening locally with their prosecution of a first-degree murder. That did convene on May 30th, and prosecution rested on June 12th, and I think we're still awaiting the verdict, last time I checked. So it was a pretty lengthy first-degree murder, and we're awaiting the results. Lots happening in Story County. Our second issue of the year of Count Our Story will be coming out in July. That's released in The Sun, so it should go to every household in Story County. We send it to all the public libraries and city halls as well. So it's another opportunity to get more information from Story County. Then again, our website is www.storycountyiowa.gov. And my email is lharter, L-H-A-R-T-E-R, at storycountyiowa.gov if anyone has any questions.
Well,
a lot happening.
Yes, a lot happening, and a lot that a lot of people will need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Because most people have some kind of an animal
exactly.
that they take care of.
Even if it's that reptilian critter that I hopefully will never have in my house, you still need to, even in different temperatures, maybe not in the heat of the day, but maybe in the cold winters, put special precautions in place.
Okay. Well, cold winters sound like a long time away.
So,
well,
yeah.
Thanks so much for coming in today, Leanne.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now we have a little transition music.
Thank you.
with that introduction, you probably recognize that we are welcoming Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms here to talk about Iowa Bird of Mouth. And our bird for this month is...
the Eastern Bluebird.
I wonder how many of our listeners could tell from the song.
They would definitely be birders.
I think that's a pretty well-known song.
Is it?
I think a lot of people know the bluebird, which is why we selected this bird for June.
Susan was saying that she rarely sees them.
So bluebirds, believe it or not, are their populations have been stable, although fluctuating in the 20th and 21st century. In fact, there's been research that has shown that their populations are perhaps are higher than they were historically. But they are a bird that gets a lot of attention, as I think everybody's knows. They're a cavity nesting species, a secondary cavity nesting species, which means that they nest in holes that are already made. They don't make their own holes like what woodpeckers do. And so they're a very good species to build houses for, and that's what a lot of people do. We see bluebird trails and bluebird houses that get put up all over the countryside. One of the particular issues with those houses is that they are also favored by other species, like house sparrows, which is one of our introduced species that bluebirds will often battle with for real estate. And so that's one of the problems with that bluebirds face are these introduced species and species that are limiting the amount of cavities that they have to nest in. So that's likely one reason why we see this fluctuation in bluebird populations.
Well, another problem that I have is I'm not a very good birder. So usually I'm not a birder at all, but my husband is. So we go for walks. I'll say, "Oh, isn't that a bluebird?" And he'll say, "No, that's a barn swallow." And so that was a question I wanted to ask you because
they look like twins from the waist up.
those wings, if that's what you're looking at, they're hard to tell apart.
They are indeed. And for me, my favorite color is orange. So any bird with orange on it, it's going to catch my eye and I'm really going to like it, regardless of what it is. And both barn swallows and bluebirds, we know, have a very bright, vibrant orange chest or breast, and so they look very similar in that regard.
Oh, I have to tell you my orange bluebird story. You know, I really have never seen a bluebird in my yard. I've just seen it while walking. And you may be, probably you're familiar with the legendary story about the bluebird of happiness and the child who goes out travels the world looking for the bluebird of happiness and comes back and finds the bluebird in the backyard. Well, it's not quite the same, but I moved from my house of 52 years last year, and I got an email from a birder friend in Colorado saying that there was an email going out all over the world that a Western tanager had been sighted at 1222 Scott. And my friend thought that was our house. Well, no, it's our next door neighbor, but there was a picture there. And yes, sure enough, there was a little yellow and reddish and orange bird on their deck. Well, then comes the phenomenon, because the people who bought our house contacted us and said they're people marching through our yard, and
myself included.
Really? You've been to see the bird?
I've been to see the bird, yeah, about a month ago, probably.
That's when it was, early May.
This is a bird celebrity.
Bird celebrity, right. And so yesterday I was in my neighborhood, so I knocked on my neighbor's door, and my neighbor was there and told the story about how, you know, this big crowd of people came with their giant scopes and cameras, and some of them came back for several days to come and see the bird. And it was just a lone bird. So while I was there, I walked into my old backyard. But I did think, you know, I've never seen a bluebird, but I've seen a Western tanager practically in my backyard. And the other thing that was a little surprising to me when I walked into my yard, we've always had a lot of birds because we purposely planted habitat with berries. But since we've left, there's been a kind of a population explosion in small trees in the backyard. And I have never heard so many birds in Ames. It was just glorious bird songs. And you're nodding your head like you know the phenomenon.
Well, this is a fantastic time of year to hear bird songs. And I think birds are also very good examples of the thought that if you build it, they will come. If habitat is there, they will find it. I've seen just anecdotally a lot of evidence of that in my handful of years of birding. But that's very well established that one of the limiting factors for birds historically has been habitat, almost for all wildlife species. And if you put habitat back, they're pretty good at finding it, whether it be a 160-acre patch somewhere or a small backyard with some shrubs and berries. They're very good at that.
So
nice job.
Yeah. Well, I know this is about poetry, and I can see that Jennifer has some poems.
I do.
There.
I brought some poems to read from the American Robin poem, which was last month, and then a couple to read from the Eastern Bluebird, which is this month. And we invite everyone to visit the Eastern Bluebird and contribute their verse. It could be one word, it could be a sentence, it could be a longer poem, whatever moves you. So this is from one thing I heard when the robin was the spotlight bird. Somebody actually said to me, "It's hard to be inspired by such a common bird." Can you believe that? I was shocked. So somebody wrote this, and this is what I wanted to bring in. Opportunists, ever exploiting, first to notice newly tilled black dirt, easy bug feasting, abundant nest material provided by last year's green bean vines, common as a cold, gleaning our yards and gardens. And here's another one. The sea serpent in Big Spirit Lake was like a giant underwater worm, being tugged from the water by an even bigger invisible robin. And someone wrote, "I am so famous they made a restaurant for me." And here's another. All robins are one robin, shooting like popped corks from the grass, resting, writhing worms from just below the surface. Worms are everywhere, just like robins, say the robin, that are one robin. Not like a broken mirror, but like a giant mushroom, choosing in its endlessness to assemble as an orange cap here, 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 here. So those were from the American Robin poem. And this I wanted to read. This is from the Bluebird, the Eastern Bluebird poem. I recently visited Goldie's Kids Club, which is a children's club that the State Historical Museum of Iowa just launched. And it was so much fun. It was Bird Day. So there was a little girl named Aaliyah, and she was sitting off to the side by herself because she had a tummy ache. And I said, "Would you like to come and help me write a poem about the bluebird?" And she said, "Where is it?" And I said, "It's about 20 steps that way." And she walked over, and she uncapped a marker, and this is what she wrote. "Bluebirds are beautiful. Teach a bluebird how to teach a little math and a little science." She was in kindergarten.
I think that has a deeper meaning.
I do, too. I love teach a bluebird how to teach. Love that.
But math and science, I think that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. That's hard for me to quite, I'll have to ponder that one.
That's right.
She didn't even think, you could tell she was operating from a very impulsive place.
Maybe she felt inundated with trying to learn math and
she
science
might
already.
Have. She might have felt this effect in her own life. But it was very cute. And Goldie's Kids Club, it was a just terrific. I think they meet once a month. You can find information about them on the State Historical Society's website.
Well, as I was telling people about this upcoming program, And I told more people because of my Bluebird of Happiness. It's a Western tanager.
That's a great line in the poem right there.
Incidentally, though, while I was there, my neighbor showed me a robin's nest that is on a post on their deck, and it had two little robins there with their mouths open. You know, come back. Where's my worm? And I've known people who had robin's nests, like by their front door, that the robins would come back to every year. But I'd never actually seen one inhabited, and it was pretty thrilling.
They're very bold. Yeah. They're they cackle. If they were a Marvel comic book character, they'd be the Joker for sure.
The robins, yes, very much so.
Yeah, and it's not just the red. Tyler, I was wondering if you could settle a bet that this topic comes up all the time at the dinner table with my family. Birds' senses of smell. How are they?
Well, just like humans, some
really
are better than others.
Ah.
So,
a vulture.
Vulture has a very good sense of smell, yes. Another group of birds that have phenomenal smelling abilities are seabirds. Tube noses are actually the family, so things like albatrosses and petrels. And the way that they forage is that they actually cue in on the aromas, if you will, that are emitted from zooplankton and other sea creatures on top of the water. And so you'll hear, I've never seen this actually, but I've heard many stories about you get these slicks, or is what they're called, of creatures and zooplankton on top of the water. And the seabirds, albatrosses in particular, can cue into that from miles away, hundreds of miles away.
Really?
They have phenomenal abilities to smell. So something like an American robin, probably not so much. But there are some birds that are very, very good at smelling things.
I read a book that said scent molecules are not only fit into the receptacles in our nose, but they also emit a vibration. So I could see birds being very tuned into the scent vibrations rather than the shape of the scent molecule.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it's a little off of our birds of the month, but you made a remark that I didn't understand about red-winged blackbirds. You said they're like something out of a Hitchcock movie. All right, now, what did you mean? Hiccup. Hitchcock. It is. It's a long time since I saw a Hitchcock movie.
Well, it's as if they're swarming. When I drive down 30, the red-winged blackbirds are darting in front of my car. I've never experienced this. The Japanese word for it is genki. They're being very energetic and high-spirited and dangerous, just erratic. And it reminded me of the Hitchcock movie, The Birds. And I have not seen this behavior from them in the past.
Energetic and erratic. My response to that would be the things we do for love.
Oh, it's that time of the year,
isn't it? We are in the peak of the breeding season right now.
See.
And male red-winged blackbirds in particular, which are probably the majority of what you're seeing darting in front of cars.
The shoulders.
Are actively defending territories and making sure they're holding down that little parcel of roadside ditch for themselves.
They've gone quite mad with it.
They've gone quite mad with it, yes, indeed. And if that may involve darting in front of 70-mile-an-hour cars.
I think, I have to turn. No, I can't swerve.
Yeah. Well, I have a question about red-winged blackbirds. Again, walking along with my usual walking companion, he said something about those birds were red-winged blackbirds and they didn't have any red on their wings. Aren't the females different?
So the females are quite different, yes. They're like the bluebird, or one of the handful of species or a few species that are what we call sexually dimorphic, where the males look different than the females. The females, are, in the case of the red wing, look very different. They're a brown-striped bird. So different, in fact, that most people will actually are not able to identify a female red-winged blackbird because they look so different from the males. But the males can also be quite variable as well, and that depends mostly on age and social status. So younger birds typically will look much like males, but they'll have much less red on their wings.
And I see that our time is up because we're going from birds to butterflies.
Oh, nice. Well played.
Fantastic transition.
Yes. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Susan,
Jennifer
for
Knox
having us.
And Tyler Harms.
Thank you.
Enjoy the birds.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, and we have just heard from Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms about the bluebird, which they selected as Iowa's most representative bird for June. While that song for the season, we called Nathan Brockman from the Butterfly Wing of at Ryman Gardens. I saw that there is a butterfly field day at McFarland Park on next Saturday. Nathan, could you describe what will be happening there?
Yeah, so this coming Saturday, we'll be taking people out on a butterfly survey. This is the survey method that we train our citizen scientists, which if you're unfamiliar with citizen scientists, is basically just volunteers who learn about something and then go out and do that activity. In our case, it's butterfly surveys. So we train them to a little bit about the protocol and how to do a survey, and then we give them some butterflies to learn. And over time, they learn more butterflies, but they'll go out and count over the course of the summer, hopefully year after year, and then we can compare those records across different sites over different years and see what the trends are for our Iowa butterflies.
Well, and ordinary people can go along too.
Yeah, so for our event, our field day, we're going to take people out, and it'll be some of our participants that'll be going, but anyone that wants to come along and go for a walk over at McFarland Park and identify some butterflies with us and see how it all works are welcome to come along.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted you to come on was when we were talking yesterday, you mentioned why they're starting to do these surveys and why they have to do surveys regularly throughout the year. So could you explain that to our listeners?
Sure. Butterflies have been in decline. We know that for many species here in Iowa, across the United States. And there's just not enough professionals out in the field doing enough surveys to really give us a full picture. So the more people we can get out into the fields to do surveys, the better our understanding can be of what's happening with these, you know, the butterflies that are found in our state and really across the world.
But are there other butterflies besides monarchs that are endangered?
Well, monarchs do get all the attention, so a lot of attention and press has been put to the monarchs and their decline, and their numbers have gone down, but there are butterflies that are in much worse shape than monarchs. There is a list, an official list, that's the Iowa Endangered Threatened Species List, and it's been around for over 15 years. It's got 2 endangered species, 5 threatened species, and 25 species of concern. And the list is really outdated now and needs more updating. And on that original list, the monarch is not on it. So there are lots of species that need attention. But again, the monarchs are the ones getting a lot of the attention because they're one that people know. And therefore they care about it, and so a lot of attention gets put towards it. But the other ones are kind of getting overlooked.
Well, I think one of the reasons that people are so aware of monarchs, besides that they're spectacular, is that older people certainly remember when they would see the butterfly tree. So their trees would just be covered with monarchs. I remember sitting in a friend's garden and watching a patch of autumn sedum just covered with butterflies. And then, you know, next year, I mean, in recent years, there'll be just 5 or 6 instead of hundreds. So you had something to say about why those changes in patterns might be happening.
Well, there's lots at play into this, and to the whole, I hear lots of people tell stories of when I was a kid, as I'm at Ryman, talking to people in the butterfly wing, you know, they like to reminisce about what they used to remember, and it was, you know, I saw fields of butterflies when I was a kid, or my flowers were visited a lot more than they used to be. I don't see as much, and for some people, it's just they're not in the right places. You know, they used to live out in the country, and now they live in town. So there's a decline just because of where they spend their time and how they spend their time. They're just not out as much at the right times of year. But for butterflies as a whole and why we see less of them, there's lots of factors that play into that. Habitat loss is always a big concern. If you don't have habitat for certain species of butterflies, especially things like prairie obligate species, like the regal fritillary, which is a beautiful, big butterfly, bigger than the monarch. You know, it needs prairie habitat for it to survive in the state here. Pesticides, particularly insecticides, are always a concern. An insecticide will kill insects, and if applied improperly, you know, that can reduce population numbers. Climate change is a piece that's gotten a lot of attention lately in how it affects butterfly populations, where they're found. We know we're finding more southern butterflies in the southern part of Iowa that we wouldn't have normally found because they're being pushed up from states that are below us, and some of ours that we were the bottom of the range, we're just not finding anymore as well. Habitat management, burning became very popular as a way to maintain our Iowa prairies, but when overused, especially, that, you know, can remove butterfly populations because they just can't survive if a entire field is burned. They if they're sitting there, they just can't get away, and then they die. So there's lots of factors that play into decline, and it really varies depending on species, which is some of the bigger factors.
Oh, well, that is. Can you give us any suggestions about how to help those vanishing species? I know butterfly gardens are very popular. Do they really help? And what do you put in them?
Any additional habitat that we can create, any resources that we can provide to insects that becomes an extra spot for them to go, is wonderful. And the great thing is when you plant something like a butterfly garden, you're not just helping butterflies, you're helping lots of insects. You know, pollinators are really popular right now as well. And by planting butterfly gardens, you can help pollinators. But really, it's all about helping insects as a whole because they're the base of the food web. A lot of things eat them, need those insects to survive on. So some ideas of things to plant. Well, there's lots of plants you can plant, and I'm not going to list off a bunch. If you go to the Ryman Garden webpage under the collections, then insects tab, you will find my butterfly/pollinator plant list. It's a great resource. It has lots of wonderful nectar and pollen plants in it. It also has all the host plants. So if you want butterflies, you have to have the plants that the caterpillars can feed on. So again, if you want monarchs, you have to have milkweed. And you know, the funny thing was is people used to rip out milkweed, spray milkweed, do whatever they could to get rid of milkweed, and now there's such a turn because of the popularity of saving the monarchs that people are planting milkweed in the front of their flower beds in the middle of their yard. You know, that would have been unheard of a handful of years ago.
Thank you. As somebody who has had milkweed volunteer in her flower garden and looked longingly for a monarch to come and lay an egg there or find a cocoon or find whatever you need to have. And the being bypassed, I know that there's no magic for getting your butterflies into your garden. But what is that website that you were talking about that people could look at?
So if they go to RymanGardens.com, and there's a collection tab because it's broken up into insects and plants. If you go to the insect tab, under that, there is a link that has our butterfly and pollinator garden suggestions as far as plants.
Okay, well, we'll be sure to try to get that on our website when we post this program. So thank you so much, Nathan.
Well, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. That was Bye. Nathan Brockman. This is Local Talk, Community Radio, and we've been talking with Nathan Brockman about butterflies.
You might wake up some morning to the sound of something moving past your window in the wind. And if you're quick enough to rise, you'll catch the fleeting glimpse of someone's fading shadow. Out on the new horizon, you may see the floating motion of a distant pair of wings. And if the sleep has left your ears, you might hear footsteps running through an open meadow. Don't be concerned, it will not harm you. It's only me pursuing something I'm not sure of. Across my dreams, with nets of wonder, I chase a bright, elusive butterfly of love. You might have heard my footsteps echo softly in the distance through the canyons of your mind. I might have even called your name as I ran searching after something to believe in. You might have seen me running through the long abandoned ruins of the dreams you left behind. If you remember something there that glided past you, followed close by heavy breathing, don't be concerned.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and thus far in our program, we have focused on nature. We just heard from Nathan Brockman about the Butterfly Field Day at McFarland Park next Saturday, June 17th, from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., and just for those of you who might be interested in going. But we're going to end our show with a focus on a social issue, homelessness. Recently, there have been several articles in the Ames Tribune and the Boone News Republican about the closing of Crawford Hall in Boone, a homeless shelter for single women and women with children. This shelter filled a distinct need in our area since the Emergency Residence Project in Ames, which is already struggling to meet the needs of the growing homeless population, has been sending homeless women and women with children to Crawford Hall. In order to learn about the future plans of the new owners, we have in the studio Mike Easton of Cornerstone Church in Ames. They're partnered with a church in Boone. Now, what is the church in Boone?
The Boone church name is Stonebridge Church.
Stonebridge Church. But in order to find out about the efforts of the Boone community in finding a substitute for the building that has served this obvious need, we have the present manager of Crawford Hall, Kathy Pinkerton, on the phone. Kathy, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome, Mike and Kathy. You've both told me that your plans are still in flux, so I'll understand if there's some questions you don't want to answer, and I hope that we'll be able to bring updates to our listeners as their new developments. But I wanted to bring you both to our listeners today, because I'm concerned that rumors will be repeated rather than solutions sought. And I'm hoping you can fill in our listeners with the details of the situation. Mike, could you give us a little history of the building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to do that. And Kathy can definitely fill in where she would like on this. It was basically opened by Reverend Crawford in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And he was a wonderful pastor over in Boone at that time. And they created a seminary, a radio station, and they had some various social justice endeavors that they were a part of. And so the original Crawford Hall and the building across the street were used for some of those things like the seminary and some of the other endeavors that they would do. So dormitory and some of that, but at certain points it's become various things like 5 years ago it became Crawford Hall at that point.
Was it always associated with a church?
As far as I am aware, it was always affiliated with a church.
So, and it was church property then?
Yep.
Okay. And Kathy, is that the history as you know it, or do you have anything you could add?
No, that's correct. That's the history as I know it.
Okay. So, Kathy, can you tell us how and when this building became a shelter? It just 5 years ago?
It was, 2011, September of 2011 is when it opened. So I guess now we're 5.5 years. It started, there was a shelter in Boone run by an agency called Good Connections, and that closed in early 2009, I believe. And at that point, several human service agencies and providers got together knowing that we still had the need for a shelter. And a committee was formed, and it was the Homeless Prevention Committee at that time, or Council, Homeless Prevention Council. And when looking for a building, Crawford Hall seemed to really fit the need. It needed a lot of renovation at the time. However, because it had served as a helping role, and it was named after a pastor who believed in social services, it just seemed like a good fit. So that's why the building was chosen. Also, Boone Biblical Church at the time was willing to let us rent it for $1 a year. So that part was affordable. And it took about 2 years with several grants and about, I would say, close to $1 million when you look at the actual cash that went into it. And also just the human, all of the volunteer work.
What about the shelter that came before? Where was that?
It was close to the Scenic Valley Railroad. And it was in, if anyone knows, the Canned Redemption Center at that time in Boone. It was above that. It was just a one fairly open area. So nothing like we have now with separate rooms and a lot of privacy.
So it's going to be hard to find a replacement, I presume.
Definitely. It definitely will be.
But do you have any places that might be that you could talk about that would be possible places to relocate?
There are. There's a building in downtown Boone, which at this point isn't zoned for homeless shelter. So that would have to, we'd have to go to the city council, which we had to do for Crawford Hall in the first place. So there's, it is a couple of people talking. There are several folks that were part of that original homeless prevention council that are still wanting to see a shelter in Boone. And so there's a school that's a possibility, an old school in Boone. There's several different buildings, all of which are not move-in ready. They would require, a lot of updating as far as getting sure we get up to code. Crawford Hall, for example, now meets all of the codes required for a homeless shelter. And so to get that done, it took, 2.5 years for us to get Crawford Hall up and going. So I'm guessing we'd be looking at least a year or so to get anything else ready.
So in the short term, what has happened to the women who will need to be out of Crawford Hall by June 30th?
There are still a couple of women there, but we've found housing for the majority of them, and Cornerstone provided the funding for one of the barriers a lot of times to getting a place is finding money for the deposit. Sometimes our families will have past due bills, like for Alliant or other places, and there's really no agencies that will help with things from the past. So it could be 5 years ago, but if you can't get electric in your name, then no one's going to rent to you. So Cornerstone has helped. They provided funding to help remove some of those barriers, things like also childcare while trying to find a place, that type of thing, transportation, you know, gas money. So, and those that are still there, we'll get that assistance also. We just are still really looking for some place for them that meets their needs.
So, well, now I think it's time to turn to you, Mike. So could you tell, and Kathy's already explained that you've been very helpful with the women who are there. Can you announce any of how did you acquire this building?
Yeah, so Boone Biblical Memorial Church about a year and a half ago or so was looking for someone to be able to run both Crawford Hall and the All for Jesus building and the church building that they owned at that time. They were running about 20, 25 members at that point, and it just became unsustainable for them to be able to oversee all of that. And so we were, as a church, looking to start a church over in Boone. And so we had started about 2 years ago, Stonebridge Church, and we were looking for a building. And so when we were approached by Boone Biblical Memorial Church that they wanted to basically give us the building that they were currently using as a just incredible gift, we were excited about that. And along with that came a couple other buildings, which include Crawford Hall. And so now we had the stewardship and the oversight of being able to see what was happening in Crawford Hall as well as that time.
And why did you decide to disband Crawford Hall and not continue with its mission? You had a new mission?
Well, the choice of ending Crawford Hall was not actually the choice of Cornerstone. It was the choice of the board that has been overseeing it for a long time. And the board, I think, in making this choice, they really understood the weight of what they were trying to do and humbly made a choice to say the level of expertise and the level of financial sustainability that it will take really needs an agency to be a part of what's happening to make this really work. And so they said that we needed to have probably an ending date for that, and it was agreed upon that June 30th would be that date. And so then looking forward, we've been in touch with the Central Iowa Community Services, which is a 10-county region of our social services within Iowa, and they proposed for us to they proposed the idea of doing basically looking for information. So they're in an information gathering stage right now to see what the need is within the community, and if they find that the need is for a family transition center, which is what we're looking to do, then they will share some proposals with organizations like YSS or other organizations to be able to basically use that building and to be able to run a family transition center out of that building.
Well, could you explain the difference between a family transition center and a shelter for women with children?
Yeah, so a family transition center and a shelter, what would be different about a shelter, and Kathy can clarify this, she's in this field quite a bit, but if you think about the Emergency Residence Project in Ames, the main focus of that is about a two-week focus. And this particular organization, Crawford Hall, has been kind of started out with a three-month transition time and then moved to a five-month transition time. And so the goal of a transitional living would be both to take in families and single moms. So we would not only be able to support women with this, we'd also be able to support men who are trying to support their family. And we would give them the opportunity to be able to walk through some steps that would help them enter into the transition hall, because that's a big transition to move from having your own place to being in a transition center, and then walking them through some things that would help them be able to move on, you know, whether it's budgeting or whether it's some life skills things or whether it's just having a community around them that can help them be able to grow and be ready for, re-engaging into the world again. That's the basic goal of it.
Well, I guess there's a phrase that you used that confused me. And you said it's different from having it's a transition from having your own place. Well, if they had their own place, they wouldn't be going to this.
Well, yes, it's a transition from when they had their own place, lost it, and now they're in this transition hall.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. Could you be able to take some of the kind of clients that are currently in Crawford Hall, the single women with children. I'm a little confused about that.
Certainly that there would be the clientele that's currently with Crawford Hall when this is able to reopen as a family transition center, which is our goal, that same type of clientele would be able to be serviced at that time. We in Ames have a program called Home for a While, in which we do a three-month transition program. And so we have some experience with what it's like to have folks come from losing their home and in 3 months being able to experience a level of community that we've provided for them and a level of just help with some of the general life skills that are important to be able to live in the middle class mindset. And so,
okay. Well, I think that there's another issue that I heard from Kathy. Part of this property includes what is now a community garden, food bank, and furniture exchange place. What are the future plans for those places?
Those places, some of those are across the street, and those will be decided by Stonebridge Church at some point what exactly will be done. As far as the things that are happening within Crawford Hall, I would assume that they will be ending at the same time on June 30th.
Rather than that, you don't think that there's a need for more than you can provide?
Oh, there's certainly a need for way more than is being provided there. There's no doubt about that. The number of women that are in need within Boone County and within Story County is absolutely huge. And so the hope in the restart for this is to provide a sustainable model financially and really a sustainable model as far as the number of staff. Kathy has done a wonderful job with a very low budget. We find that it's probably about an $80,000 budget that she had to work with. And really, that organization needs about $250,000 a year to really function in the way that it would be very profitable for these women. It would be staffed in the way that's appropriate for this building. And so to be able to continue those services, we know that we need a sustainable financial model, and we need an agency that will be able to understand and oversee those things.
Okay. Well, Kathy Pinkerton, do you want to talk at all about any future plans? Do you know anything about, for example, community garden? That's a lot of land.
The garden, some of the plots has some perennials, or like strawberries, for example, or asparagus, rhubarb. That's still there. And a few people did plant, but for the most part, it's empty. We have had an offer from someone else. It's late this year, so hopefully next year we can get that going to use some of his land so that people that had plots in the garden could continue to do so. It's great when you have an apartment and you have no access to a yard. You know, if you can come and have a small plot and have fresh vegetables, it helps as far as just your family budget. It's also great for family time for the kids. So we've really loved having that. Same with the food. The women that are leaving will take what's there, but the rest will just go to the other food pantries so that everything will get used.
That has not been decided about what will be next.
Okay. Don't know what's going to be next. All right. Well, thank you both for coming, and I hope clarifying some of the unanswered questions, and we'll try to have some more updates with both of you as things move ahead. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I, Susan Franzen, have been your host for today. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harter, Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms, Nathan Brockman, Mike Easton, and Kathy Pinkerton. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. noon and 7 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear us online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard were Bluebirds from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and The Elusive Butterfly by Bob Lind. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'll join us and to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. So come join our Local Talk team. We've made a change in our morning schedule. Until now,
Democracy Now! Was aired on KHOI at 6 p.m. weekday evenings. We are now airing it also at 8 to 9 a.m. Morning Masterpieces will return at 9 a.m. We have made this change in light of the rapidly changing events in the national news. Now, the headline news is at the top of the hour. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Mary Greeley Medical Center, providing inpatient and outpatient services on a continuum of care. Located at 1111 Duff Avenue in Ames. Find out more information at www.mgmc.org. That's mgmc.org.